This is Ozarks at Large for Friday afternoon, April 2nd, 2021, on your public radio station, 91.3 KUAF, a listener-supported service of the J. William Fulbright College of Arts and Sciences at the University of Arkansas. Ahead today, Ozarks at Large's Antoinette Grajeda provides an update on efforts to have legislators in Little Rock adopt a hate crime package. Later this hour, Ozarks at Large's Zuzanna Sitek talks with Washington County Justice of the Peace Evelyn Rio Stafford about her recent meeting with Governor Asa Hutchinson, discussing a bill passed earlier this week regarding transgendered Arkansans and medical care. We'll also talk with Michael Tilley from Talk Business and Politics about the health of sales tax collections in Fort Smith and why he's watching how those collections behave in a post-vaccine world. This afternoon on All Things Considered, Asian Americans and Black Americans have a shared history of solidarity, a political alignment that's emerged in spite of the two communities' differences. That story, the afternoon's news and more on All Things Considered from 3 to 6 on 91.3 KUAF. There are 211 new cases of COVID-19 in Arkansas after the last 24 hours of testing. The Arkansas Department of Health is reporting 10 additional deaths from the virus, an increase in active cases of 29, and two more patients hospitalized with the disease compared to this time yesterday. As of late yesterday, the ADH is calculating 18% of the state's population is fully vaccinated. Another 15% has had partial vaccination. All Arkansans 16 and older are now eligible for a shot. The University of Arkansas plans to continue to follow its already established health protocols for the spring semester through at least the end of the spring semester. Chancellor Joe Steinmetz says the university will be discussing distancing guidelines in the coming weeks, especially for outdoor venues. And he says officials are considering opening that up a bit over the course of the semester in a way that promotes the safety of all involved, with an eye toward a more typical summer and fall semester. The Arkansas Razorback softball team, ranked 11th in the country, still has 16 regular season games on its schedule. But already, infielder Braxton Burnside has set a new single-season record for home runs. She belted her 18th in a 6-1 win over Auburn last night. Arkansas remains the only SEC team undefeated in conference play. Arkansas and Auburn again at it in Alabama this afternoon. Arkansas and Auburn baseball teams are playing in Fayetteville tonight. Last night, Auburn won a pitcher's duel 2-1. Should be clear tonight. Lows will be in the lower 40s throughout the KUAF listening area. Sunshine tomorrow, mid-60s in northwest Arkansas, lower 70s for the Arkansas River Valley. And why not? Sunny on Sunday as well. Highs throughout the region Sunday afternoon in the lower 70s. This is Ozarks at Large. It is a Friday afternoon, and the National Weather Service says we should expect sunshine through the rest of this Friday afternoon. I'm Kyle Kellums. Thanks for being with us. In just a minute, an update from Ozarks at Large's Antoinette Grajeda about hate crime legislation in Little Rock. Before we get there, quick reminder, this is the final day. We are in the final hours of the 2021 spring fundraiser for 91.3 KUAF. Thanks to everyone we have heard from so far. If we haven't heard from you yet, you can go to supportkuaf.com and make a contribution. And thanks to all the sustaining members who have become sustaining members over the last several years and continue to support us throughout the year. We appreciate you being a backbone of the success of this public radio station. Thank you so much. If it is your turn to contribute, one last time on this noon edition of Ozarks at Large, we have incentive. Lynn and Joel Carver of Springdale have upped the challenge for this last fundraising edition of Ozarks at Large for 2021 spring, a $1,500 challenge. We'd like to raise $1,500 between now and the end of Ozarks at Large. We do that with your help at supportkuaf.com. This is a challenge that works in pieces, right? You make a contribution, your friend, your neighbor, someone you don't even know who also listens to public radio. We all make the contributions together. And then by the end of Ozarks at Large today, we've raised $1,500. Lynn and Joel Carver of Springdale will match that. It's a $3,000 hour for Ozarks at Large to keep the great programming like Science Friday, All Things Considered, Shades of Jazz, Pick and Post, and Ozarks at Large coming to you throughout 2021. The amount of the challenge is completely left up to you. We just ask that you go to supportkuaf.com and make a contribution. Thank you. Thanks to the Carvers from Springdale for making this $1,500 Ozarks at Large specific challenge. Thanks to everyone who's doing their part to make sure public radio remains strong here. Arkansas is one of only three states without a hate crimes law. State legislators filed a bill to change that in November, and the governor has continued to urge lawmakers to pass such legislation. Despite this, there's been little movement on the effort during the 93rd General Assembly. To raise awareness and encourage legislators to take action now, organizations from around the state yesterday gathered on the steps of the Capitol in Little Rock to announce a new initiative. Ozarks at Large's Antoinette Grajeda has more.
The Urban League of the State of Arkansas and its partners are launching Arkansas United Against Hate, a campaign to pass hate crimes legislation during this year's session. Scott Hamilton, president and CEO of the Urban League, says a goal of the initiative is to bring more public attention to the issue. Hate crimes laws permit enhanced penalties for offenses committed due to certain characteristics, such as race, religion, or sexual orientation. Some opponents argue the LGBTQ community should not be included in the legislation, but Hamilton says no group should be left out.
No matter what one thinks about a particular group, because that in itself is indicative of what we're trying to deal with. And so some of our understanding is that there's some pushback about having the LGBTQ groups included in hate crime legislation, but we believe that that's absolutely imperative because, again, no one, we believe, should ever be the target of violence, if you will, based on something that is personal to them.
One of the dangers of not including a specific group in the bill, Hamilton says, is not having added legal protection if victims are attacked under an incorrect assumption they belong to an unprotected class.
Well, let's say if someone is attacked, and they're not part of the LGBTQ community, but the attacker perceived or thought they were and inflicts bodily harm or death upon that person. Are we now saying, oh, well, hate crime legislation won't work for that person, even though they weren't part of that group? But clearly, maybe the attacker thought that. So from mistake or whatever, all of a sudden now that hate crime legislation that may have been passed lacking that particular group could not be applied. How do you explain that? How does one deal with that from a legal perspective?
Several organizations are partnering with USLA in its new effort, including the Little Rock branch of the NAACP, Immigrant Advocacy Group Arkansas United, and the Asian American and Pacific Islander Democratic Caucus of Arkansas.
We felt that that's very important to, you know, include groups that show the great diversity in terms of what hate crime legislation can focus on. We've got the Arkansas Black Mayors Association. We've got a group called First Just Talk, which is an LGBTQ community group. We've got a Second Baptist Church. So we've got a pretty broad group.
In November 2020, Representative Fred Love, a Democrat from Mabelville, joined Senator Jim Hendren, an independent from Gravette, in filing a hate crimes bill. However, Senate Bill 3 has never been presented to a committee this session. During Thursday's press conference in Little Rock, Love said the effort to pass hate crimes legislation in the coming weeks will be a struggle, but a law is needed in Arkansas.
Make no mistake, hate crime legislation cannot stop the hate in the hearts of people. Only God can do that. However, if we have the opportunity to deter people from acting on their hate, I think it is imperative we use the means of legislation to ensure the blessings of liberty.
Thursday morning, prior to the Urban League's midday press conference, a group of Republican legislators, including Speaker of the House Matthew Shepard, filed SB 622, which would require offenders involved in an aggravating circumstance to serve at least 80% of their sentence. The bill defines an aggravating circumstance as an instance when a defendant purposefully selected the victim because they were a member of or associated with a, quote, recognizable and identifiable group or class who share mental, physical, biological, cultural, political, or religious beliefs or characteristics, end quote. During his weekly press conference with reporters, Speaker Shepard said if the bill passes, every class or group will be protected in the state of Arkansas.
That is much broader and much more substantive than many of these so-called hate crimes bills across the country. And I think that this is going to be a success. I think that here's the deal. Go look at the other hate crimes laws across the country. Many of those do not include some of the classifications that some of these groups are seemingly wanting to demand of us. But the fact of the matter is our bill actually covers, again, to my knowledge, it covers virtually every group that has been protected in any other hate crime law in the United States.
Mideya Reith, founder and executive director of Arkansas United, says she needs to consider the bill further, but after an initial examination, she's concerned that specified classes and vulnerable populations are not explicitly listed in a way that would ensure accountability. Reith is also concerned that vulnerable communities were not included in the drafting of this bill.
But if we're going to have this conversation, then let's do so in a way that includes the communities that would be impacted and make sure that's meaningful for them. Because at the end, it's those protected classes, those vulnerable groups that need to feel that this bill was indeed something valuable and welcoming. But the sponsors are folks that we have worked with in this session. And so definitely looking forward to the conversation.
Representative Shepard says while working on the new legislation, his conversations with lawmakers were primarily on an individual basis. Now that the bill has been filed, he anticipates additional discussions. Reith says her organization will begin reaching out to legislators about being participants in those discussions next week. The 93rd General Assembly has extended its session until April 30th. After that, legislators will enter an extended recess until later this year, when they'll reconvene to address redistricting. For Ozarks at Large, I'm Antoinette Grajeda.
A pleasant Friday. This is Ozarks at Large. With me on the phone from his Fort Smith office is Michael Tilley with Talk Business and Politics. Michael, welcome back.
Hey, thanks for having me back.
Let's see. Sales tax numbers in Fort Smith continue to come in, and they continue to be what we thought they would be. Why is that?
Yep. Well, they continue to beat those budget estimates. And I think we're still just seeing, we've talked about this before, but we're still just seeing the consumer beginning March and April of 2020 of last year, you know, there was a significant shift in how the consumer spent their money. And so they began spending money on products that have a tax on it, a sales tax, a local sales tax, you know, instead of maybe, entertainment or services or other things. And so we're continuing to see that, especially in Sebastian County and Fort Smith. The city's share of the Sebastian County tax in the February report, which, bear with me for a second, the city gets those numbers in March. It reflects January sales. So when I talk about the February report, we're talking about January transactions, but the city share of that was almost $1.6 million, which was up almost 16%, which is just interesting. I had expected at some point, because we're now, and this really wasn't the case maybe in January, but I think as more and more people get vaccinated, and as some people unfortunately think, you know, this is over and they can go do and whatever, and we're already seeing that. People having mask burning parties, which is unfortunate, but that may have a counterintuitive effect on sales taxes where, you know, if they're going to travel or they're going to start doing other things, they may do those things outside the area where the local tax is not, obviously the tax is not collected locally. But for now, the sales tax revenue is strong. Now that doesn't mean the economy overall is doing great. I think we're still seeing through, you know, the use of food banks and some of the other things that there's still a lot of folks out of work, a lot of folks that are receiving a lot less income than they were, especially if they're in some of those services sector type jobs. But City of Fort Smith, in terms of budget, is doing well. This also means they're collecting significantly more than expected on for the street tax program that puts more money into that program, which helps fix roads and drainage and bridges. So hopefully that will continue for the city. And it will be interesting to see as they go forward, as the tax, either that percentage gain, if it decreases,
right,
what the city does in terms of spending, future spending, do they put some in a rainy day fund? Because after this pandemic, I think we all realize that it can rain really, really hard, and you may need a good rainy day fund. So I think that may be the story we begin to cover later into the year. How do cities like Fort Smith take this benefit, so to speak, of increased sales tax revenue? How do they plan forward? How do they budget forward on that?
The biggest ship in the news in quite some time blocked the Suez Canal last week. It certainly gave us a steady supply of memes. You have an article that people can read right now at talkbusiness.net with a logistics expert who says it probably will not harm greatly supply chain as far as Walmart is concerned. Why not?
Well, yeah, not as far as Walmart concerned. It may hit some other retailers. But I talked to Greg Forbes. He is a senior vice president. He works with a logistics company called RJW Logistics Group. They're out of Illinois. And he spent more than 30 years with Walmart shipping product in various roles with Walmart. So he's been there, done that, and as the kids say, has the T-shirt, I'm sure. But I talked to him because depending on which report you would read, this was either going to have an immensely detrimental impact on the global supply chain or not so much. And so I talked to Greg and looked at some other reports. It kind of hits in the middle. The thing to remember is that before this ship got stuck in the Suez Canal, the global supply chain was already stressed, is a good word. And it has been since March and April, because when you literally flip the switch on what the consumer wants or doesn't want, or when you flip the switch on, hey, we need, 100 times more PPE than we needed just 45 days ago.
Right.
You change the entire dynamic of what gets loaded, what gets offloaded. And so ports along the West Coast, East Coast have been backed up. And that capacity issue also involves trucking, rail, that kind of thing. But talking to Greg, his point, and this is something that I learned, was that Walmart long ago implemented what he called a multiple port policy. They use different ports. They even, and I didn't put this in the story because the story is already getting too long, but use Chicago, a lot of product that comes through the Great Lakes, they can, gather up in Chicago and distribute from there. But Forbes does think that there will be, and it won't be an immediate impact because it's going to take a while for some of these things to cycle through. But he wouldn't be surprised if hard goods like furniture, outdoor equipment, even some goods that are some products, partial products that are used in the assembly of products in the U.S., if there's there may be a shortage of those. But in terms of essential items, food, toilet paper, obviously, that everybody's concerned
right.
about, he doesn't see a shortage in those areas because a lot of that is already domestically sourced in the U.S. or it comes from Canada and Mexico.
Finally, let's roll up our sleeves and talk about the news that Garrett Lewis, a beloved meteorologist, is this summer going to end his 20-year TV career at KFSM. Tornado watches aren't going to be the same.
Well, I don't think we should have them anymore if Garrett's not going to be able to report on them.
I'll make that trade. I like Garrett, but I'd make that trade.
Just no more bad weather, period. That's it. Bad weather days are over. After 20 years now, this story made me feel old because, he didn't begin reporting until shortly after, 2001, I think it was. Well, obviously for 20 years. So he's still in my eyes a young man at 40, but good for him. I had a chance to visit with him after he made the announcement. And Kyle, I can tell you, I could hear just the relief in his voice.
Yeah.
He's really ready, I think, for a new part of his life. And he stressed during, and we put it in the story, and he stressed during the interview that he's not upset. He's not unhappy. It's a great job. He loves it. He loves the people. He said he even feels bad. He feels like he's letting some of his longtime viewers down. But, you know, he said after 20 years of literally being on call 24/7 because the weather.
Right.
You know, it's a lot like our news business. You know, I'm not in his shoes in terms of weather, but, you know, it is a 24. I can attest it's a 24/7 job. People don't not commit news on Saturdays and Sundays just because I'm off work, you know, so to speak. So he's had that. He's got a young family, a couple of young kids. And, you know, he talked about in the past few years how with technology, social media, you know, there's more of a demand to be now, be in the moment with the news. You know, this is what's going on now. And it's just, it takes a toll on them. And even talked about there have been vacations they've had to cut short or cancel because of, you know, a weather event was coming up and it was kind of all hands on deck. So look, he is smart. He's a great talent. He's going to have all kinds of options. I could even see him teaching at a college somewhere, but yeah, we're definitely that part of, you know, there are a lot of folks in this area that literally grew up with him. That's going to be an interesting shift. But yeah, I think we, you know, if I can't have somebody with their sleeves rolled up telling me to, you know, run to the interior part of the house, I'm just not sure I can take it serious anymore. And maybe it's out there with the other weather folks. I just haven't kept up with it over the years, but you cannot say that you don't understand why weather happens because he lays out a very good with over the years has laid out just the incredible science behind why the weather does what it does. And I hopefully somewhere with someone that will continue.
I agree. Michael Tilley is with Talk Business and Politics. We talk to him almost every Friday. Michael, have a great first weekend of April. Talk to you next week.
All right. As always, thank you, sir.
Crystal Bridges Museum of American Art presents North Forest Lights, an outdoor, family-friendly light and sound spectacular, open each Friday to Sunday after sunset through April 4th. Advanced ticket reservations are recommended and available at crystalbridges.org. Arkansas Community Foundation helps protect, grow, and direct charitable dollars as donors learn about community needs. Smart giving to improve communities. arcf.org/smartgiving for more.
This is Ozarks at Large. A pleasant Good Friday to you. I'm Kyle Kellums. More of our program just ahead. We are in the final day of the 2021 KUAF Spring Fundraiser. 5 days when we take a few minutes throughout the broadcast day to remind you that the reason we can come to you is because you come to us, or you go to supportkuaf.com and make a contribution in the amount of your choosing to your public radio station, 91.3 KUAF. To help you along that path on this final day of the fundraiser, Lynn and Joel Carver of Springdale have challenged us during this hour of Ozarks at Large to raise $1,500 collectively. They'll match that $1,500. It'll be worth $3,000 by the end of Ozarks at Large today. You can make your contribution at supportkuaf.com. You know, most of your choices for news, for information, and entertainment have a set fee. You don't just tell Netflix or Hulu or the Arkansas Democrat Gazette, the New York Times, or ESPN, or Cox Cable, or whomever you subscribe to that you think, this month we'll pay this much. No, they tell you how much you have to pay. Public radio, thankfully, we think, operates on a different model. You listen whenever you want and as often as you want, and you decide whether or not to pay for the service you get from your public radio station. This week, during our spring on-air fundraiser, we're reminding you of all you get when you listen to public radio. And guess what? We have on-demand services, too. Ozarks at Large, available as a podcast. The New Classroom, the podcast from Zuzanna Sitek about education in the time of COVID. Listen when you want. We remind you of the importance of making a donation to KUAF as well. Listeners donate anywhere from $2,500 to $12,000 a year. Average contribution is, around $120. But we leave it up to you to contribute what you can afford, what you want. And when enough public radio listeners do make a contribution, stations like KUAF are able to continue providing important news programs like Ozarks at Large, Science Friday, and All Things Considered. Asking you to do your part and help pay for the quality programming KUAF brings to you whenever you tune to 91.3, you can make a contribution at supportkuaf.com. We continue to prioritize safety. No phone volunteers. Again, this spring fundraiser, it's staff only inside the Carver Center for Public Radio. But we have made it easy for you to contribute right now at supportkuaf.com. And when you do, you'll be helping us match that $1,500 challenge that's specific to Ozarks at Large right now. We'd like to have this be a $3,000 hour by the time Ozarks at Large is done. SupportKUAF.com, and thank you. This is Ozarks at Large. Earlier this week, a bill that would ban Arkansas minors from receiving gender-affirming health care and penalize doctors who attempt to provide it was approved by the Arkansas legislature. House Bill 1570, which is called the Arkansas Save Adolescents from Experimentation Act, or SAFE, was sponsored by Representative Robin Lundstrom of Elm Springs. This comes after the governor had already signed the Fairness in Women's Sports Act, which bans trans women and girls from participating in publicly funded school and college sports, and the Medical Ethics and Diversity Act, which allows healthcare providers to refuse to give care to a patient on moral or religious grounds. As the SAFE Act sits on the desk of Governor Asa Hutchinson, the governor recently met with a member of the local trans community. Ozarks at Large's Zuzanna Sitek spoke with Evelyn Rio Stafford about that meeting. Rio Stafford is a Washington County Justice of the Peace and the first openly transgender Arkansan elected to office in the state.
Tell us about what happened this week, because you got a surprise invitation to go down to Little Rock on Tuesday.
I did. When I started this week, I really did not expect to be meeting with the governor. The legislature passed HB 1570 on Monday. And I really have to thank Representative Nicole Clowney for setting up a meeting with the governor. And basically the idea was that she felt that he should hear some actual voices of trans people before he took action. Originally it was going to be just me, and I talked my way into bringing another person with me because I felt like someone who was closer to this issue even than I was should be there. So I picked Willow Brashear. She's 18 years old. She transitioned in Arkansas public schools when she was 13 and had firsthand experience with this issue that this bill addresses.
What did you want Governor Hutchinson to know about HB 1570 as that bill sits on his desk?
I thought this was a great opportunity for the governor to actually hear from trans voices, because too often in this whole debate with this bill and other bills, trans people have been sort of left out of the conversation entirely. There's been a lot of talking about us without us. There are no openly trans people in the Arkansas legislature. Too often, these kinds of conversations happen without our voices being included at all.
And what about the governor? What did he want to know? What kind of questions did he ask?
The governor asked a lot of questions. He wasn't trying to rush us out of the room or anything like that. In fact, we went over time. He scheduled 30 minutes for this meeting, and we actually went 40 because he was just really interested in learning about an issue that I could tell he really didn't have a lot of experience with.
It sounds like you feel that's a good thing, but are you disappointed he didn't meet with you or other trans people before signing some of the other bills that have been signed in the last few weeks?
We did talk about some of the other bills. What's interesting is he asked my opinion about a couple of the bills he already signed. You know, part of me was like, the bill's already been signed. I'm not sure why you're asking me, but I think he's starting to see that there's bill after bill after bill coming out of this legislature that affects trans people in our state. And he did ask the question of how trans Arkansans, the trans Arkansas community is reacting to all this.
And what did you tell him? How is the trans community in Arkansas feeling in this moment?
I basically told him that there's a lot of fear. People are concerned. People are worried about what's coming next out of this legislative session.
Especially this latest bill, HB 1570. It's unlike anything we've seen anywhere else.
Yeah, this healthcare bill would be the first of its kind in the nation. And I basically told the governor that this is a very pediatric trans health is a very complex issue that requires a lot of nuance. And this bill does not have nuance. This is a very heavy-handed bill that would completely ban any kind of pediatric trans health, regardless of parental consent. Willow told the governor about her experience transitioning as a teenager in Arkansas. She talked about how she'd had a year of therapy before she ever, went on hormones or anything like that, how she had to have parental consent, how her mom and her grandmother were both supportive and were involved in the decision-making every step of the way. And I think the governor really had a lot of questions about everything. He had a lot of really good questions. And I think he was making an honest effort to learn about an issue that he really didn't know a lot about. One of the things we talked about was the fact that this bill outlaws a lot of things that aren't happening in Arkansas in the first place and never would happen, most likely because there's professional standards around trans health. And so this bill addresses solutions that there actually is no problem.
How did you walk away feeling after your meeting with the governor?
Yeah, I got the feeling that the governor really wanted to learn about this, what this bill does and what the actual issues are. I walked away knowing that the governor learned what life was like for Willow and for other young people like her, a real flesh and blood Arkansas trans youth. It's not just an abstract issue anymore. This is something that affects real people. And, we often find that, visibility can help change minds when it's not such an abstract idea, when you're actually talking to a real human being. Sometimes that helps personalize the issue.
And what about legislators? What's your message to them as they still have a few weeks left in this session?
I think one thing I wanted to say is in this meeting, one of the things I realized is that this is not the governor's agenda, and this is not necessarily something that the governor has asked for. The governor has repeatedly asked the legislature to pass a hate crimes bill, which they failed to do. So the source of these bills isn't coming from the governor. The source of these bills is coming from a small group of legislators and Leslie Rutledge in some cases. And they're really pushing an agenda. So I'm not sure how easy it is to get through to the people who are actually putting these bills forward. I'm not sure if they're reachable or not. What we've seen is that often some of these bills that are being pushed through the Arkansas legislature are kind of cookie cutter bills that are almost identical to bills that are being put forward in other states. And they're originating basically from hate groups that are outside of Arkansas.
Are you concerned that passing and signing HB 1570 will lead other states to do the same thing?
Yeah, that is a concern because Arkansas right now is on the vanguard. And I think there is a concern about a domino effect. And so if Arkansas decides to, you know, turn this bill into law that could create a domino effect in other states. If the governor vetoes this bill, that could sort of stop similar bills in their tracks in other states. So I think this is a super important decision, not just within Arkansas, but the effect that it could have on other states as well.
And on a personal note, how are you feeling right now?
Well, I would say that I'm feeling frustrated. What I'm trying to do right now is to use the platform that I've been given to try and hold space for other folks in our community who are in vulnerable situations, hold space for parents who are concerned about what's going to happen with their trans youth. Are they going to have to move out of the state to get the health care that they feel they need? To try to hold space for trans people who are concerned about losing their insurance, and to hold space for, you know, folks who are just in vulnerable situations.
Thank you so much for speaking with us.
You're welcome.
That was Evelyn Rio Stafford speaking with Ozarks at Large's Zuzana Sitek about her meeting with the governor regarding House Bill 1570. Rio Stafford is a Washington County Justice of the Peace and the first openly transgender Arkansan elected to office in the state. Governor Asa Hutchinson, as of press time, has not indicated whether he plans to sign or veto HB 1570. This week, a teacher at Springdale Central Junior High resigned after he was caught on camera making remarks that don't represent the school's district's values. That's according to district spokesman Trent Jones. Jones says the school district learned of the incident Wednesday morning, and the teacher resigned by the end of the day. In the video, which was shared on Facebook and appears to be taken from inside a backpack or bag, the teacher, who has not been identified by the school district, can be heard telling a student to stop talking and look at him. Here's what the teacher says after that.
You act like you're Marshallese. Marshallese students never want to look at me when I talk to them. That's not respectful, dude.
But Melissa Leilon, who is founder and executive director of the Arkansas Coalition of Marshallese, says actually the opposite is true.
I don't know whether it was, whether you would identify it as racial or discriminatory remarks, all the above, lack of inclusion. But if it come down to it, it's really just not understanding that the meaning of certain things in certain culture, right? So looking and staring at someone when you're being talked to, especially an authority figure, it's very offensive and very rude to look back at that person. Especially if you're being scolded.
Springdale School District is not just the largest in the state, it's also one of the most diverse, with large populations of both Hispanic and Marshallese students. Leilon says she had a couple of thoughts after a staff member showed her the video.
So my first reaction to that was, oh my goodness, this is exactly what we've been talking about of cultural training to providers. And on top of that, I was kind of heartbroken. I was very heartbroken about that and just really stunned of the lack of understanding.
The Arkansas Coalition of Marshallese has been offering its cultural training program for about 3 years. Mostly they work with healthcare providers, law enforcement, and attorneys. And while they have been brought in by a couple of the school districts in the areas to provide their training to teachers, Leilon says Springdale has not been one of those districts.
If you're going to teach a diverse group of students, number one, I think that's very important that you need to understand at least the basic cultural norms of each group. But also, I think the benefit of that extend out to the families as well, and also to the community in general. You know, it would be helpful and make sense to have, you know, these sort of trainings in place as part of their hiring process.
District spokesman Trent Jones says the Springdale School District has a partnership with the Arkansas Coalition of Marshallese, and the district welcomes more collaboration. He also says the district's teachers go through diversity training. Melissa Leilon says the organization plans to contact Superintendent Jerry Cleveland to discuss providing additional cultural programming.
You have to be intentional about things, especially what is happening around you, right? Again, a growing community like Springdale, we intentionally need to look at the changes that are happening around us and address those accordingly to where it doesn't offend anyone.
And Melissa Leilon adds the teacher who resigned, and his words, don't represent all teachers in the Springdale School District.
I love Springdale. This is my home. I'm a Springdaler. Maybe I should say Springdale Islander. Because it is my home, and we all need to do our part to make it comfortable for everyone. We are committed to make Springdale a safe place and a very welcoming place for all, not just Marshallese, but also for any other groups.
The school district posted a statement to its Twitter and Facebook pages on Wednesday, reading in part, "We continue to promote an inclusive environment. We value, respect, and celebrate all of our students." This is Ozarks at Large.
Ozarks at Large is underwritten, in part, by the Walton Family Charitable Support Foundation. KUAF is supported by American Shaman Kava Bar, featuring local craft beers and organic kava drinks in a family-friendly atmosphere. Coming soon, the Shaman Rec Room, offering ping pong, pool, and darts. Inspired and designed by locals in downtown Fayetteville. AmericanShamanKavaBar.com for more.
It is Friday, April 2nd. With me on the phone from her office in Bella Vista is Becca Martin-Brown, who is the features editor at the Northwest Arkansas Democrat Gazette. Becca, welcome back to Ozarks at Large.
Thank you so much. You know, we're getting closer to when we could actually do this in person. I am a member of the fully vaccinated club. I just have to wait my 2 weeks.
I am with you. In fact, a week from this conversation, I will have been 2 weeks from my second shot. Mask wearing, social distancing until at least then, and then we'll navigate. We're slowly figuring out what to do.
It's going to be really exciting. Even with masks, even with social distancing, there are people I'd really like to see, and you're high on that list.
Ditto. So, yes, we will get there.
There are people who are already going out and doing stuff, and we have both live in-person events for this weekend and a couple of online ones if you're still awaiting your second shot or waiting to be fully cleared to go play.
You know, there are people waiting for their first one still. So, yes, there are people. Yeah,
I know. Well, we are very excited to have joined the Fully Vaccinated Club. Mm-hmm. And if you have joined the Fully Vaccinated Club, the Museum of Native American History reopens today.
That's right.
They have been closed. They closed March 13th, 2020.
Wow, that seems so long ago.
Doesn't it?
Yeah.
But they did not rest. They spent that time putting up a new expanded Bells and Whistles website where you could get a complete virtual tour of the museum in English and Spanish. They've been doing their seminars and their story hours and multi-day events like the Native American Cultural Celebration, all online. But it was finally time to reopen, and they made it in time to be part of the exhibit that they're sharing with Crystal Bridges called Companion Species. They have 15 artworks from Crystal Bridges that are installed alongside their collection of amazing multi-century Native American art. Among them, Thomas Moran's Landscape of Wyoming and Joseph Stella's large painting of abstract floral and bird forms. And then at Crystal Bridges, there are some items from Mona that are in conversation, as they like to say about art, with work by people like Woody Crumbo, Louise Burchell, William Holbert Beard. And it's all based on this companion species speech bubble piece by Marie Watt that Crystal Bridges acquired. So all that's going on at the Museum of Native American History. Plus, they've done a bunch of revamping and trying to make it more wide open so people will feel good in the space. And they've redone their museum store. Many things to see and do. And you can find out more at mona.us. Also, while you're out and about, the Northwest Arkansas Audio Theater Group is doing Shakespeare's Comedy of Errors in the park.
Which park is that?
Well, it depends on which day it is.
Fair enough.
If it's 2 o'clock tomorrow, it's at Shiloh Square off of Emma Avenue in Springdale.
Okay.
If it's 2 o'clock April 10th, it's at Gully Park Gazebo in Fayetteville.
Okay.
And if it's 2 o'clock April 17th, it's streaming from the Fayetteville Public Library.
And this is audio theater, so it is as if it's radio. You can see a sort of radio production.
But it's being directed this time by Jacob Christensen, and so he's added a little bit more theater.
Okay.
So there's more costuming, more of a hybrid performance. And you can find out more on Facebook at NWA Audio Theater. Now, if you prefer to hang out online, boy, does Sona have something for you.
Yes, they do.
This may be the coolest thing that they've ever done, and I cannot explain it well enough, but I'm going to bet you can help me.
It's multimedia.
What they've done is taken a French symphony called the Petite Symphony, which debuted in 1885 in Paris. And they've added artwork to take you to Paris while you're listening to the musicians play the symphony. It debuts at 6:30 tonight as a digital release on Facebook, YouTube, and sonamusic.org. It's free. I'd go to Paris for free.
I went to Paris last weekend for free.
See?
It was Logan County, but it was still beautiful.
We also need to do a quickie of what's happening this weekend, because we now have many things happening. Tonight, in the Atrium, a Carnatic Journey Indian Classical Music, part of the Free in the Atrium series. Get free tickets at waltonartcenter.org. That's at 7 o'clock. Also online, Murder for Two at Theater Squared. You can find out more about that at theater2.org. Last two performances tonight and tomorrow night, for the Lifespan of a Fact at Arkansas Public Theater in Rogers, 8 o'clock showtime. There's no Sunday matinee because it's Easter. You can find out more at arkansaspublictheater.org. Saturday morning, the Shiloh Museum is doing a drive-through milkweed giveaway in Springdale from 9 to noon, so you can feed your butterflies. And online from the Washington County Historical Society at 1 o'clock Saturday, a celebration of 40 years of the University of Arkansas Press. And you can find out more about that in today's calendar in the Northwest Arkansas Democrat Gazette on the SUP, an abbreviated entertainment guide page.
Becca Martin Brown is the features editor at the Northwest Arkansas Democrat Gazette. Becca, thank you so much. We'll talk to you next Friday.
Absolutely. Have a great weekend, guys.
This is 91.3 KUAF, your public radio station. This is Ozarks at Large. I'm Kyle Kellums. Thanks so much for joining us this Friday afternoon. Science Friday is ahead, all things considered, on the air after that. Ozarks at Large, Science Friday, all things considered, three great examples of why KUAF is different from other radio stations. We provide in-depth news, in-depth conversation. We commit to telling you what's happening in your part of the world every day of the year and what's happening around the world. If this is important to you and you understand how public radio works, you can go to supportkuaf.com right now. We do have a $1,500 Ozarks at Large specific challenge. A few minutes left to meet this challenge. If we raise collectively $1,500 during this hour, it's matched by $1,500 from great friends and supporters, Lynn and Joel Carver of Springdale. It's a $3,000 hour for KUAF and 91.3. You pick the amount and make the contribution at supportkuaf.com. We think KUAF is the modern version of the public square. Listeners coming together to learn the latest information about the ever-changing story around coronavirus and vaccines. But unlike what you might hear on the street or read on Facebook, we check the information we give so you can be sure it is true and reliable. Since you're relying on KUAF, now a perfect time to support this nonprofit news source. Contributions from our listeners make KUAF possible. You can join our contributing listeners right now at supportkuaf.com. Help us meet the $1,500 challenge from Joel and Lynn Carver before the end of Ozarks at Large on this final day of the 2021 spring fundraiser. Every day, NPR and KUAF provide you with the highest quality news and information, news that's relevant and important to you. Programs like Morning Edition, 1A, Science Friday, Here and Now, All Things Considered, and Ozarks at Large bring you more than just headlines, more than just sound bites. We provide you with insights, stories about people, ideas, and cultures. Public radio takes the time to tell the longer story. None of the in-depth programming on KUAF, none of it, would be possible without the support of listeners just like you. Listener contributions, the station's most important and largest source of funding. Public radio strives to bring you radio that is worth your time and worth your financial support. If you haven't had the chance to make a contribution during the first 4.5 days of our spring fundraiser, we're giving you a chance right now, online, safely, securely, quickly, at supportkuaf.com. Let's meet that $1,500 challenge from the Carvers. You pick the amount, you pick the method, but it's important, because you listen, that you go to supportkuaf.com, and thank you.
In the background is pianist Sullivan Fortner, and I'm Robert Ginsberg, your host for Shades of Jazz. We'll hear more from Sullivan, as well as another great group of piano players, including James Booker, Kenny Drew, Oliver Jones, and Richie Byrack. Tune in every Friday and Saturday right here on KUAF for Shades of Jazz, 91.3 FM, listener-supported National Public Radio.
This is 91.3 KUAF, Fayetteville, Fort Smith, Bentonville, and Devil's Den. 91.3 KUAF is a listener-supported service of the School of Journalism and Strategic Media at the University of Arkansas, and Ozarks at Large is a production of 91.3 KUAF. Contributors to this edition of Ozarks at Large included Antoinette Grajeda and Zuzana Sitek. Timothy Dennis produced this Good Friday edition of Ozarks at Large at his home studio in downtown Fayetteville. Our thanks to Michael Tilley from Talk Business and Politics for his usual Friday contribution, and to Becca Martin Brown, the features editor of the Northwest Arkansas Democrat Gazette, for her usual Friday contribution. And thank you for your contributions to 91.3 KUAF throughout this spring fundraiser week, and for keeping public radio strong and independent where you live. Also, thanks to Lynn and Joel Carver of Springdale for their $1,500 challenge during Ozarks at Large on this Friday. Our theme is titled The First Hurrah. It is written and performed by Daryl Sean. Daryl is often performing live on his Facebook and Instagram feeds around 4 o'clock our time each afternoon. We will be back with you Sunday morning at 9 for the next edition of Weekend Ozarks Large. And of course, we're back Monday at noon to start a brand new edition of Daily Shows of Ozarks at Large. If you ever miss a daily edition of Ozarks at Large, just ask your smart speaker to please play Ozarks at Large, and it will comply by giving you the most recent daily edition of Ozarks at Large. You can also subscribe to our free Ozarks at Large email newsletter, gets you up to date on what's happening in your part of the world, and gives you direct links to stories and interviews that were on that day's shows. Also, we're a podcast, and we're available for free through all the major podcast distributors. Thank you so much for your continued support to Ozarks at Large, 91.3 KUAF, and public radio throughout Northwest Arkansas, the Arkansas River Valley, Eastern Oklahoma, and Southern Missouri. From the Anthony and Susan Hoy News Studio, I'm Kyle Kellums. Take care of yourself. We'll talk again soon.